Free agency in college football is in full swing. And Michael, we got some commits to talk about. We got some movement to talk about in the portal as it's college football gone wild. And this is the theme that we've seen year after year after year in this sport as it is changing, man. It's changing, but it stays the same, right? It always seems to change, but every year you're having thousands upon thousands of players enter the portal. Florida State has seen its fair share enter this year. We got a quarterback commit to talk about. We got running back commits to talk about. Offensive line commits, which, you know, we love to talk about. So we have a lot to talk about today, man. We got some good news and we got some bad news to share too. You know, I always joke that saying that I love, Michael. Life's looking up so it can kick you where you ain't watching. And it's been that kind of week, right? That's what it's felt like, from the great news of Deuce Robinson and Jabril Rawls coming back to the, you know, the news about the twins and things like that the other day, to some of the commitments that you got. I have a lot of mixed feelings. So we appreciate you guys joining us. We are the guys from Plant the Spear. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. And, man, we got a lot of ground to cover in a fully loaded show that the news cycle just kind of dumped a big plate in our lap. So, man, I'm excited to get into all this. But before we do that, my friend, how are you? And excited for another show.
Yeah, man. Welcome to free agency. I'm doing all right. You know, in the NFL, free agency is a little bit different. It's a little bit more controlled. In college football, it is, like you said, the Wild West. So yeah, you better buckle up and keep your head on a swivel, because it's just up and down, east and west, north and south, and 360 around.
It feels like, you know, back in like the, before online shopping took over, like back in the 90s and 2000, when you would see like the Black Friday.
Yeah.
And they open like the mall doors and there's like grandmas getting trampled and people body slamming someone over at Elmo on aisle 5 and stuff. That's like right. This. It's just what college feels like. Just an unmitigated Wild West. But, you know, the thing about the portal is, man, a give and a take, right? It's, if it wasn't for the portal, we wouldn't have had the good seasons that we did. And if it wasn't for the portal, we wouldn't be losing some of the players that we have. So it's give and take. It's give and take for sure. But again, we got a lot to cover, man. Also, the administration finally has come out of the shadows. And we've seen Michael Alford make a public statement along with, or a press conference along with, new GM John Garrett and Mike Norvell. So we're going to talk about that a little bit as well. So, man, lots to get to. But before we jump into this, I just want to bring you guys a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall. I'm going to go ahead and get it out of the way now so I don't forget in the middle of the show when we get going. But, guys, look, you don't ever have to worry about getting great gear from Alumni Hall FSU. They got awesome stuff. That's where my shirt came from, all these hats, everything that I have. Came from Alumni Hall, man. So make sure you check those guys out. Look, we're not going to quit supporting FSU and loving this program. So we're going to keep wearing the gear. And so you guys make sure you check them out, 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee, or you can shop online at alumnihall.com and make sure that you use 10% or save 10% by using code SPEAR. You can use that online or in store. So we appreciate you guys supporting those that support us. So, Michael, let's get into it. I think the first thing I want to start with very quickly is just about the press conference that we saw take place by Florida State's admin, Mike Norvell, John Garrett, and A.D. Alford, just to kind of provide a little bit of clarity on how this front office setup is going to go, what we know about it so far. And I just have to, I kind of boil it down. I know I didn't get a chance to kind of watch all of it. I kind of caught the footnotes. So I'm going to give my main takeaways of what I feel is important. I'll throw it back to you, and we'll just share some quick thoughts on this. So the main things that I had here was it will be a collaborative effort between the two, right? It is not going to be one hand decides over the other hand and no one gets to share information. It's not like John Garrett's coming in telling Mike Norvell, you're going to take this guy regardless. It's not like Mike Norvell is going to overrule John Garrett on every single decision. It is going to be a collaboration, and you have to work together in this format. So I think that's a good thing. Now, the one thing that I think people probably didn't take well, and that I didn't necessarily love either, is that they did say Mike Norvell will still have the final say. And right. So, I will, at least to credit to Mike, he said, you know, there can be times where we can disagree on things. And I think that helps with the, you know, the evaluation. But I also think about it where, you know, with some of these, it's good to have that checks and balances,
right?
Which is what Mike Norvell talked about. And so that I do like. But I think, you know, a lot of people, when you have a guy who's kind of been responsible for the slide of the program, didn't want to hear he's still going to be the guy calling the shots at the end of the day. But he has head coach by his name, and that's why you paid him $10 million a year. The other main point that I had here is that John Garrett will basically handle all the negotiations. Mike Norvell will not be involved in NIL contracts and stuff like that. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's how it should be. To me, it avoids somewhat of a conflict of interest, right? Where it's like, oh, the head coach chose to pay me this and only pay you that. And so to me, it just kind of, I think that cleans up a little bit of maybe the locker room stuff from a coaching perspective. So I think that's good too. And there's still more staff members to add to this front office operation. So it's still a growing operation. They just wanted to get John Garrett and the other guy that came over from Miami, they wanted to get them in place so they could help fill out the staff. And they basically said, like, tell us what you need to be successful and we'll go get it. So that's pretty much my take on the front office. I'll kick it to you for your take. But again, collaboration, Norvell has the final say. Checks and balances, I think, are good. And there's still more to go.
Yeah. I mean, you generally summed up what I took away from that as well. I think there are a couple important points that came out was, you know, just asked about, you know, who has final authority, you know, and John Garrett said, well, you know, Mike does, because he has the HC next to his name, the head coach, right? And even Alfred said that, you know, Mike will have final, you know, authority and direction over the whole program. But what I did think was made clear was that, I think Mike reiterating this made it helpful, was to say that they're not going to bring in a player if they both don't agree on it. Now, they both are going to come at it. They both can potentially come at a player from a different perspective. But at the end of the day, according to what Mike said, and we'll see how this actually plays out, that they will not bring in a player or recruit a player unless they both agree that this is the player they should be having. And I imagine that as a GM, you know, whether pro or college, you're going to defer to your college coach who is actually doing the coaching, who actually has the system and knows what type of player he needs in the system, right? The job of the GM is supposed to be, is Mike sits down, Gus, Tony, they sit down with the GM and say, these are the type of players we need. Then the GM's job and the recruiting staff's job is to go out and find those players, scout them, and put the best players in front of these coaches to recruit, right? So in a lot of ways, you shouldn't run into too many disagreements in the high school rank. I think where it's going to come into play is in the portal, because and one thing that I love what John Garrett said is that every person is in the portal. Every player, every team is in the portal. Like, that's the way you have to look at it, because you never know which player is going to be in the portal or not at the end of the day. Now, I think it's almost impossible to scout all those players. There's 8,000 players in the portal right now, somewhere around that number. You're not scouting all that. But at least you have a board for every position. You have five or six players on that board that then if and when they enter the portal, right, you're also doing the back dealing conversations with their agents and stuff like that. So anyways, so you have that. I thought that was important. I thought another thing that was important was the conversation around just the rev share, because we all know that John Garrett is walking in with a, you know, kind of a difficult hand. And so, you know, Alfred kind of clearing up his stance on the rev share, that he believes the rev share is the cap, not NIL. And so I think that's going to play parts as well, too. Again, Jesse, and I'll throw this back to you on this, is kind of what we talked about in the pre-show. You know, one of the bigger questions I have about this whole setup is, you know, how do you fairly judge whether or not John Garrett and his staff? The other thing I was going to mention is that Tyler Edwards would be handling the negotiations. John Garrett will be handling kind of the overseeing of the staff and stuff and help with the negotiations. But how do you fairly judge, you know, whether or not John Garrett and his staff are living up to the performance? Like what are going to be the ways that, and that, it'll be interesting to see as they continue to progress down this new structure.
Yeah. And that's going to be a really hard one to judge, which is why I think John Garrett probably had to have some kind of guaranteed to outlast Mike Norvell if he were to get fired next year. Because, I mean, from John Garrett's perspective, like, man, I can go buy you a NASCAR tomorrow, a Ferrari tomorrow. Right. But if I, you know, if I put someone in there that's not a race car driver and he crashes it into a wall.
That's right.
It's not that I didn't hand him the keys to a Ferrari.
That's right.
He just couldn't drive it. And that's so, right. It's hard. But, you know, like we were talking about pre-show, I think you'll be able to see, like, the talent's not equal in the record. So you should be winning more, which has been the case the last couple of years anyway. So yeah, we'll see. It's interesting to hear how that played out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure more details will come out as time progresses. I just thought it was important to start with that because we're going to talk about a lot of the free agent situations. And so it kind of sets the table to know how these things are being gone about. But I do love the checks and balances. I do love multiple eyes on multiple players. So then, you know, if you see like, okay, this guy, I like this guy, but the other guy says, what the heck are you looking at?
Right,
I don't like this guy. You can at least have a medium in there, right?
Right.
And so with that being said, Michael, we'll transition into probably the hottest topic burning up Florida State right now. And that is, for all intents and purposes, it appears Florida State has its quarterback starter for 2026. Now, obviously, there's going to be a competition. Given the quarterback, we're going to talk a lot about him in just a second. Given the quarterback you brought in, I don't think Kevin Sperry's out of the picture, right? If he can beat this guy out, he could be the starter, but I don't – they're not bringing him in to be quarterback too. Let's just leave it at that. And that is Ashton Daniels. Ashton Daniels started his career at Stanford, then transferred to Auburn, didn't play a whole lot there. Now he's at Florida State. And I have really mixed feelings about this, especially like I'm sure most of the fans did. Like you text me about the prediction for him to land at Florida State last night, and it was around midnight, and I was like, I'm just going to go to bed on that because I can't deal with that right now.
Right.
And then I woke up and I saw it this morning and I was just like, man, I'm just torn, right? Because what I feel like with Florida State shopping for a quarterback is kind of like buying a used car or buying a car with bad credit, right? You walk in, you look at the Corvette and you're like, oh man, how nice would that be? Then you go look at like the Camaro or, you know, a nice Silverado 2500, something like that, whatever brand you're loyal to. And you're like, man, that's real nice. I would love to have that. And then they go, buddy, you got a 580 credit score. Let's go over here to the Ford Pinto or the Chevy Cruze. And that's just kind of where it feels like we're at with this quarterback position. Yep. Because now we're going to talk a lot about Ashton Daniels, and I have found some things that give me encouragement about this quarterback. I think he can be serviceable for FSU. With that being said, there is also some negatives that come with that. And I think the initial reaction to me, the initial gut reaction is this is, it feels like Groundhog Day at the quarterback position, right? Yep. You went out and you got DJU, a guy who kind of got ran off from Clemson, did okay at Oregon State. No one really wanted him after that. We took him. Then you go after Tommy, a guy who left UCF so he could go to a bad Boston College team so he could start. Didn't really do great there. Got benched, got kicked off the team. I highly doubt anybody else was really going to take him at the Power Four level, and we take him. So now you have another quarterback in Ashton Daniels who goes to Stanford, starts there. He's okay. He's not good by any means, but he's not terrible. Then he goes to Auburn, doesn't win the starting job over Jackson Arnold, who wasn't good, and then later on wins the job, and now he's here at Florida State. So it just feels like Groundhog Day with us just, you know, kind of taking these project, maybe we can fix it quarterbacks. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, because sometimes you can find hidden value in some of these quarterbacks, right? The problem that I have with taking this approach is our staff, whether that be Mike Norvell and Tokars and all them with DJU, or, you know, Gus and all them with Tommy last year's, we have not shown the ability as a staff to save a good quarterback or to save a bad quarterback, right? Fix a broken quarterback. We have not shown the ability to bring DJU in and he got better. We have not shown the ability to bring Tommy in and he got significantly better. Right. Both of them kind of almost got worse. Yeah. And so it's like, now you're going to take on another project and tell the fans, you hope that we can fix them and we can make them something good, when you don't have a history of doing that.
Yeah.
And so I think that was my initial gut feeling. And, you know, again, we'll talk a lot about him, but you know, the funny thing is, and I'm going to completely unedited and I'm going to read this. So when we were setting up for the show, we knew we were recording before we knew we had Ashton Daniels. We were going to talk a lot about quarterback options when it felt like we had a lot of options we were looking at. This is exactly what I had next to Ashton Daniels. Why? He's just a bigger version of Tommy. Good runner, bad passer. Don't get it. That was my initial note for Ashton Daniels. Now, once I started looking into it, I've come around on him a little bit, but again, man, it just kind of feels like that Groundhog Day situation at quarterback, where we're trying to save another broken quarterback and make it work when we haven't shown the ability to do that. So before we get into all his numbers and his history and all that, we'll talk about all that in just a second, man. Just give me your initial gut reaction when you saw the news.
Yeah, I was conflicted because – you know, I didn't really like any of the other options they were talking about.
And to be fair, I didn't either.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of Calandria. He's a turnover-prone quarterback from Virginia who went to UNLV under Dan Mullen, who's a quarterback whisperer. And even then, he was still a little bit turnover-prone. Yeah. You know, obviously, DJ Lagway's a rival. You know, if this was DJ Lagway coming out of high school, I'd have been all excited. But we've seen two years of him. You know, he's often injured. He hasn't lived up to the, you know, we've only seen flashes of that. So I wasn't really excited about that either. With this news, I'm very much conflicted. There's a lot of cons, you know, of pros and cons. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cons, and there's very few pros after watching his film. And I know we're going to get into all of that. So I was just kind of like, this is what it is. Like, I just,
yeah.
This, again, like you said, this has been a repeat of the decisions we've made the last 2-3 years now, yeah. Right? We thought we were going for broke with DJU, and it was clear we weren't.
We went broke, right? And broke a few bricks.
We still got to replace. And then we settled, and I still believe Tommy, because I said it on this show last offseason, that I didn't think Tommy was the right fit for this school. And we settled for him. And I feel like we've had to settle for Ashton Daniels as well, too. Now, I don't know if we're going to get into all the reasons why we feel that way or whatever, but there are multiple things at play here that I think have aided to this opportunity as well, too. And so it's just, I'm kind of just like, yeah, it is what it is. This is the decision-making process we're used to at Florida State with Mike Norvell.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, just to touch on that for a second, the other options, the reason we ended up here and all those things is, like, first off, you know, when you come to the table, and I want to talk about this a little bit later in the show when we talk about the portal losses, is you don't have a lot of house money to gamble with right now, right? The chips are more in the players' hands than they are yours, because you're not selling some great successful program.
Right.
You don't have a $30 million NIL budget where you can, you know, the Texas Tech just went, must be nice to have some oil money. Like, man, someone that went to Florida State own like an oil, can we like buy Florida State? Can you buy some land in Texas and set up an oil mine or just do something? Seriously. Like something. But you know, they just paid the Sorsby kid from Cincinnati $5 million. Like, Florida State's not going to do that. I think a stark realization that I'm coming to, that a lot of fans need to come to as well, is we're just not top tier in NIL. We just can't pay $5 million for a quarterback. I think what's disappointing is you heard they were willing to go to 2 to 2.5, and now we're back in the bargain bin again with another quarterback that the rumor is you're going to get him for under $1 million.
Right.
Now, by all means, I'm not for overpaying for mid. Like, the rumor with the Calandria kid is that he wants like $3 million, $3.5 million, and he ain't worth it. I mean, I reached out to a UVA friend of mine that covers them, and just to kind of get some backstory on him, and he's like, man, the rumors coming out of UVA was he just was not really good for the locker room. He was a guy that would like sprint for a first down and then step out 2 to 3 yards beforehand. Like, just, he's like a white Tommy Castellanos, to be honest. Like, he's just short. He's undersized. He's turnover prone. He's just like Tommy with a better arm, and it's not significantly better to go from, what did he make, 900 to $3.5 million. There's no way I'd pay for that.
No.
So I'm fine without it. Like, and basically what happened is we couldn't come to terms on numbers because we weren't paying that much. And so I'm okay with that. Right. And then, you know, I think Deuce Knight, the one from Auburn, that's probably out now that you already took this guy. Now, to keep in mind, Florida State probably is going to take some form of another quarterback for depth. But then you talk about Lagway, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I think you would have been excited coming out of high school. And for me with Lagway, it was kind of like this was the highest ceiling. This would have been the you know, former five-star, the like number one or number three quarterback or whatever in the class that he was in. And so you would, this would have been the most talented quarterback that Mike Norvell has ever signed.
Right.
And so you would have been like, wow, okay. And you could probably get him for another couple of years. Now you'd have got him on the cheap a little bit because of what he did at Florida. He made a bunch of money to be really bad. But you know, he was also injured at Florida and all that. So that's a whole nother conversation. That's not really worth having if we're not going to get him, but you could have seen that maybe there was some upside there. And then, like you said, man, it feels like you settled again.
Yep.
Now, granted, I think when you look at the production standpoint, I mean, Lagway's numbers aren't much better or worse than what this kid has put up.
Correct.
So were you going to pay over for that? So I think my point is when you boil it down to the market we were in, the options that you had, none of them looked great.
Correct.
So if you're going to take the value proposition and say, let me get the best value that I can get. Do I pay $3.5 million for Calandria, who's mid? Do I pay $2.5 million for DJU or DJU? Geez, DJ Lagway, who could be DJU. I mean, we called him Lagalele last year. Or do you settle for the guy that's maybe a mil or less that's probably bringing a lot of similar things to the table, right? And I think that's just where we ended up, man. And it's disappointing to the fan base because you want to have that big name at quarterback. Like, this just feels like a gut punch. And that's not saying the kid can't be good, though. So let's talk about him. Former three-star out of Buford, Georgia, 64th-ranked quarterback in the 2022 class. He's currently the number 26 quarterback in the portal per 247. I do like 6'2", 220, so he's actually got some size. He's bigger than Tommy, which gives him a little bit more durability. He did redshirt at Stanford in 2022, started 20 games out there with the Cardinal, and then three at Auburn. Pretty much was basically like once Hugh Freeze got fired and Jackson Arnold got benched, they gave him the job. And so I'm looking at this man. He's got 1 year remaining. And at first when I saw the news, I was like, okay, this is quarterback two, right? But no, I don't think so, because absolutely wants to be QB1 for the next team. Now, obviously, again, every competition is open. So if Sperry's just night and day better, they're going to probably use Sperry because they're not paying this guy $3 and $4 million, right? And so you do have that option as well. But I think he's going to end up being your starter. And so when I look at him, you know, you start back at Stanford, and the numbers were okay, like 23 at Stanford. He had a 58.8% completion percentage, 2,247 yards, 11 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. He's got a little bit of a turnover problem here, but he ran the ball 109 times, 289 yards, sack adjusted, that is, and 3 touchdowns. That's not sack adjusted, 289 yards, 3 touchdowns. Then Stanford, he comes back, 62.7% completion percentage. He got better passing, but only for 1,700 yards, 10 touchdowns, 12 picks. So the passing kind of started to get worse, right? The touchdown to interception ratio. But, you know, when you look at the running, man, he ran all over teams that year. 148 rushing attempts, 669 yards, 4.52 per carry, 802 sack adjusted yards, 3 touchdowns, but 7 fumbles. So,
yeah.
When you're hearing this, man, this is a Gus Malzahn special, buddy. This is a guy who can run first and then throw. And what I worry about is you just get back into the same position like you were with Tommy, where you got a good running quarterback that's not a great passer. And if he gets dinged up and he can't be his mobile self, you're just stuck with a bad passer.
Right.
And so that's what concerns me. But I will say, when you're trying, and look, man, I understand, we were talking about this before, the state of the FSU fan base, media, all that stuff right now is to just flood the market with negativity. And we're going to be honest, right? We have mixed reviews about this. We both have reservations with this take.
Yep.
But I try and look for some good things in there, right? And I think when you think of the fit in Florida State's offense, in Gus Malzahn's offense, and what he's going to be asked to do, I think there is some things you can take away, right? The guy has run over 100 attempts, 2 out of his 3 seasons. So you can run him consistently. He seems pretty durable. He's got the size. He's bigger than Tommy, which is nice to see. And he's run for, you know, 800 sack adjusted yards 1 year. He just really didn't get the sample set that he got at Auburn that he did at Stanford. But then you look at Auburn and, you know, he played a little bit there. 57.1% completion percentage, 797 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks. So the passing just isn't much better. Now, he did say, I heard where they were talking about on one of the games that I went back and watched, that he was excited to be at Auburn to get that level of coaching, because he really didn't. This was before Andrew Luck was at Stanford and all that stuff. He may have been there 1 year, but he wasn't really getting the level of coaching at Stanford that he was at Auburn.
Right.
And he's even said he's wanting to go somewhere where he can continue to get developed. And my problem is, like, bro, you're a senior. Like, you're about to get developed into an insurance salesman if you don't get developed into a quarterback. And so it's just, you're taking a senior project, which is kind of crazy. But the one thing I will say about Auburn, he did run the ball 63 times, 280 yards, 4.44 yards per attempt. He's had a good yards per attempt rushing for basically his whole career, 2 touchdowns. Again, got the start after Hugh Freeze got fired and Jackson Arnold got benched. And when you look at the positives, man, he started against Vandy. They put up 38 points in regulation and took Vandy to overtime. Vandy, you know, I know you hear Vandy.
Yeah.
You mind, Vandy was a good team this year.
Yeah, exactly.
He threw for 353 yards and ran for 104 sack-adjusted yards in that game. Yep. And I like to do sack-adjusted because sacks I don't think should take off their rushing total. But 104 sack-adjusted yards, scored 4 total touchdowns, no interceptions, and had a 66% completion percentage. I see that, and I'm like, sign me up. Then you look at the Bama game. He threw for 259 yards, ran for 114 sack-adjusted, only scored 1 touchdown and had 1 interception, but then his completion percentage was 46.2%. Now, when you go to PFF, you also slide over and you look, because I'm always curious of this, Auburn dropped 7 passes in that game. His adjusted was somewhere around 82%. So, like, he would have had probably well over 300 yards, too. So, he absolutely torched Vandy. Had they caught the ball, he probably would have torched Bama. But then you have the Kentucky game. Oof. And that's the one where it's like, what are you going to get? 46.4% completion percentage with only 1 drop. 108 passing yards and an interception. He did run for 80 sack-adjusted yards, but it was just a stinker of a game. And when you go back and look at the game log in Stanford, that's been the big story of his career, right? It's been he will go off for 350 one game and then throw for 78 the next game. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But I'll throw it back to you on this, man. A couple of things that I do want to say when we talk about him and everything that he's been through in his career and coming to Florida State is, first off, when you look at the time at Stanford, we know good and well, whether he's good or not, he didn't have a lot of good around him at Stanford. So you will, he never had a Deuce Robinson to throw to. I can assure you of that. So that could help elevate him. Now, he had Cam Coleman, all those guys at Auburn, but he really didn't get a fair chance with those guys, right? Because he wasn't the starter, so he wasn't even practicing with those guys. The other thing is, side note, Auburn's offensive line sucks. We looked it up before the show. They were 116th in pass block efficiency. Last year, Florida State's was 31st. So you give him some time, because when you go back and you watch the film, dude is like hiking the ball and immediately running for his life every snap almost. And so you can see the difficulties of that there. But what I do like about him is he's a willing runner, man. Yeah. He's not scared to lower his shoulder and get you some tough yards to pick up that first down. He's pretty darn good at evading pressure and making something happen on the perimeter. And the last thing I'll say, man, is Auburn's offense had not put up over 500 yards all season, including games against Ball State and South Alabama. When this kid took over, of course, he had the Kentucky game, which was really bad. But then against Vandy, they put up 563 total yards and 411 yards against Alabama, which they had struggled to put up over 400 yards when Hugh Freeze and Jackson Arnold were the going to. He's had 5 100-yard rushing games, sack-adjusted, in his last 13 starts. That's pretty darn good. But he's also committed 35 turnovers in the past 3 years, and 19 of those was the season that he was a full-time starter. So like you said, man, there's some pluses. There's some negatives for sure. I love the mobile running aspect. I love the bigger body, the bigger frame. I think you have seen some flashes of what the passing can be, but there's also turnover prone. There's the inconsistency. There's the Kentucky-esque games that he has that makes you go, man, I don't know what quarterback we're going to get, right? If you get the Vandy quarterback, sure, he could probably, with Deuce and Danzy and McCoy, he could probably lead a pretty darn solid pass offense and win you some games. But if you're getting the Kentucky quarterback, we're going to be in trouble. And so that's where I look at with him, man. This feels like a very a somewhat high ceiling if you can fix the passing in this offense, right? I'm not saying he's an NFL prospect, but in Gus Malzahn's offense, what he's going to be asked to do, you can see an okay ceiling. You can also see a really low floor, and that's what makes me nervous.
Yeah, I would agree. I'll start with the good. You know, I think when I went back and watched, I watched every single throw he made against Vanderbilt. And, you know, what I liked about it is that, like, he has a really quick release. I like that he will get the ball out if he has time. He'll get it out in time. He throws it really well in the catch window. And basically what that just means is that when a receiver is getting to the top of his route, the ball is being placed in a catchable space and area. So he, when he has time and when he sees the play correctly, he will throw it right in the catch window, which is really good. I've already said as a quick release, he will run. He's a runner and he's good at it. He's a different type of runner than Tommy Castellanos. Tommy is more of that, you know, dash, scat back kind of make you miss in a phone booth. Ashton Daniels is not that, but he's a tough runner and he has speed. So if he gets out in the open field, he can run away from you. But he's going to lower his shoulder. He's going to take contact, and he's not going to just run out of bounds after, you know, after picking up a yard or two like we saw this year with Tommy. So I really do like that as well. I think he, you know, in that Vanderbilt game, he went through his progressions when he had time, and the first his first option wasn't open. He did go through his progressions. So I really like that as well too. Now, the cons.
Yeah.
In 24 games he played with Stanford, Jesse, 9 games he had a sub-60% completion rate.
Yep.
Sub-60 in 9 of 24 of those games. He was under 60% completion percentage, right? I think with his delivery, he has a weird mechanic to his delivery as well, too. He gets super happy feet in the pocket. I mean, just like throwing off his back foot. He's like tap dancing a lot back there as well, too. Sometimes some of the and when I asked you about this, some of the pressures that the Auburn offensive line gave up, I think you said it was like 30% was on the quarterback. For Ashton Daniels of those pressures that they gave up 30%. That's a significant amount on the quarterback, meaning you're holding the ball too long. You're not seeing your reads correctly or quickly, or they're not developing, which is another problem, right? In that sense, we saw that with DJU in the 24 offense where, you know, he was holding the ball long because the wide receivers weren't getting open. So it could be, you know, a both end issue. My other thing is this kid has only played not even mediocre football. He has played terrible football, meaning not him always, but he has played on terrible teams his 3 seasons. He started 2 at Stanford, and they were absolutely hot dog water, okay, at Stanford. And then last year, he just had an incompetent coach trying to call plays that just didn't make it happen. He couldn't beat out Jackson Arnold, who basically got told to get the heck out of Oklahoma. He couldn't beat out him. Finally, in Hugh Freeze's game against Kentucky, he starts him, and then he benches him for Jackson Arnold again. And then when Hugh Freeze gets fired, then Jackson Arnold starts those 2 games. And, you know, it wasn't great. And so initially, like I said earlier, I thought maybe this was just maybe your backup option. But if this is your long-term, like the whole season QB1, I think Florida State's going to have some serious issues again with this quarterback. You know, my hope is, Jesse, and I'll throw this back to you on this, is my hope is that they're actually bringing him in because they actually believe that Sperry could potentially take this and they're going to bring some challenge and see how it works out.
Yeah, and I do think you will challenge. I still think he's probably going to end up being your starter. But, I think back to some of the things you were saying. And, like, on the one hand, when you do watch him run at Auburn, like, he does – please hear me say this. Do not clip this. Do not – whatever. He does not throw the ball like Cam Newton in any way, shape, or form. But you see him back there at Auburn, you know, he's a long leg strider, kind of big body, physical runner. He kind of runs like Cam in a way. You know what I mean? He's not that one where, like – He's not a Jordan or a Tommy, like you said. He's not going to make you miss in a phone booth. But if it's 3rd and 2 and the DB's on the first down line, he's going to try and take you out and try and get that extra yard. What did I like? Because we saw a lot of times Tommy wouldn't do that.
Correct.
DJ, you wouldn't do that. And so I like that. But you're right, man. The inconsistency's been a big problem. And maybe the Kentucky game, you know, first start at Auburn, you didn't get a whole lot of chances to work with the ones. Maybe that had somewhat to do with it. It's just like we said, man, I think it's going to be kind of a low floor. And what I'm hoping is at least you have, and we'll talk about some of the other pieces to this next, is I think you're going to hopefully have such a good running game with him involved that you don't have to heavily rely on the passing game. My concern is that you're going to end up in the same situation that you were in last year. You didn't have a good enough passing game to really set up the running game very well. And you also didn't have a quarterback where people really respected the pass game.
Correct.
And so that's what worries me the most. But again, you give him the best, you know, surrounding cast that he's ever had to play with. And I know we're talking about Florida State, and people are going to be like, the best surrounding cast. Well, they're better than what they were at Stanford, talent-wise. Lord knows, I know we lost to Stanford. and Auburn had some pieces, but, you know, I think the Vandy game, they said, like, they were shuffling offensive line and stuff like that. Vandy, you know, or Auburn at that point was basically out dead in the water in the season. And so, yeah, man, I think from a perspective of, you know, where does he put you on the win loss total? I don't see this being like a 10 plus win quarterback. I just don't, man. But I think in a Gus Malzahn run heavy, like, you know, the quarterback, that converted DB, Nick Marshall, golly.
Right. Right.
You know, if you're going with a hoping, that's what you hoped you got out of Tommy, but you didn't, because Tommy lost his mobility in the middle of the season. If this guy can stay mobile and just cut down on the turnovers, I think he can be serviceable for Florida State, right? I think he can get you to a bowl game. Now, I know that's not where we want to be.
Right, right.
But, you know, there is some upside to the kid. And so we'll see how it plays out, man. We'll see if they take someone else to supplant him. We'll see if it just – this is the reading in the room, and this will be the last thing I say on the quarterback because we've got to move on, is – again, once you re-sign Deuce, once you had all these defensive guys leave, and we were talking about this before the show and all this, where you only got so much NIL money to go around, right? And so you were bit by, you had to replace your entire offensive line. You had to replace basically your entire defensive line, your entire linebacking core. You had to bring in a couple pieces. You just didn't really have the money to go big quarterback shopping. And so I think out of the options that you had, the ones we talked about, that you could actually land Calandria, this kid, or Lagway, for the value proposition, I don't think it's a bad grab, right? I just don't think it's one that's like, man, this guy's going to save Mike Norvell's job and all that stuff. And you know what? Maybe this is the hero we need, right? Yeah. Maybe this guy does bad, gets Mike Norvell fired, we build him a statue somewhere on campus, and that's his Florida State career in a nutshell. But, you know, we're going to hope for a good result. I mean, obviously the guy can – he can run, you know, he can run him 100 times a year, and he's got a decent arm.
Right.
It's just, you know, how is he going to perform in this offense? I just get nervous because this is not a staff that's shown to have great history with quarterbacks. And so now you're taking another project who's a senior with 1 year left, and I just don't love it. But moving on from that, because we got a lot more to talk about here, talking about the run game, getting this man some help at quarterback, right? So he doesn't have to carry the entire load. And Florida State did land another commit, Texas transfer Trey Wisner, senior, another guy with 1 year of eligibility remaining, led the Longhorns in rushing the last two seasons. And I know everybody's thought when I posted about this was, but did we need a running back? Was it a priority to get a running back? And the clear answer is no, obviously, right? You still have Chroma, you still have Singleton, but man, I look at it like this. You cannot be scared of competition, right, when you're signing these players. Now, were you going to go out, do we need two running backs? No. Did you need to maybe pay an exorbitant amount for a running back? No, I don't think so. But you can't be scared of competition. Like, I remember there was a time when – remember when Georgia had 3 5-star quarterbacks from Fields and Jacob Eason on the roster at the same time? Like, you knew they were, two of them were going to transfer. You knew it. But they still were like, okay, well, the best man wins. And I think that's what you got to look at it here because, you know, yes, I'm going to say this in two ways. Yes, Cam Martin, the new running back coach, and Gus Malzahn like to feature one back. One of the big sells for Wisner was the history with R.J. Harvey. But the problem lies in what if Chroma is your workhorse this year? We're putting all our chips into this guy, and we know Gus Malzahn's offense. If you can't run it, you're dead in the water. What if he gets hurt in the spring? Knock on wood. What if he gets hurt game one, and then you're having to rely on Sam Singleton and the freshman? So I don't necessarily dislike this take either. I like it because I think this kid is a stud, man. When you look at just the production, right? Now, he's not Dalvin Cook, but he's a solid running back. So in 2024 at Texas, again, against Power Four competition, you know, on a good team, he put up 1,064 rushing yards, averaged 4.7 yards per carry, and had 5 touchdowns. One thing that really gets overlooked with this kid, too, that is a big aspect, he also caught the ball 44 times for 311 yards and a touchdown. So he's a good all-purpose back. Now, you look at 2025, he saw almost 100 fewer snaps from being banged up. He only played in 9 games, but he still put up 597 yards, led Texas in rushing yards, 4.56 yards per carry, and 3 touchdowns. Still caught 22 passes out of the backfield, 146 yards, and a touchdown. The scouting report on him is that he doesn't have a lot of breakaway speed. He isn't overly powerful, but he has good patience, good vision. And from my perspective, man, he is an experienced, proven producer at the Power Four level. How many times have we talked about this over the past, right? I like production more than I like potential. And you're also talking about, you know, the conversation we always have is, well, how does that production translate from G5 to P4? Well, you're getting a guy who proved he can produce at the Power Four level.
Yeah.
And so, man, that's to me, that's why I don't have a problem with this take. Did we need him? I don't know that we needed him, but is he a good addition? I think yes. I mean, he's had 5 100-yard games in the past 2 years, all against Power Four opponents. I had a Texas fan comment on the post about him and said, you know, I don't think he would have hit 1,000 yards this year. He'd have been healthy. You know, he was okay, but he wasn't great. And I was like, well, if you he had 96 less carries than last year. If you do his yards per carry times that, he would have been about 1,050 yards. So you would have had a guy, had he have been healthy, probably would have been a back-to-back 1,000-yard rusher. You have Cam Martin, a running back coach, that's produced a 1,000-yard rusher every season he's been a position coach. I understand you worry about, you know, chasing Chrome off or something like that. But, man, if Florida State has a 1,200-yard rusher, a 1,000-yard rusher, or whatever the case may be, Michael, I don't care whose name is by that. I care that you produce the yards, right? Yeah. So did we need it? I don't think so. Is it a good take? I do think so. And we'll see how it plays out, man. I don't know. Like, you know, what's his name? Roydell Williams. He played Alabama, mildly productive, not really great. Salchuk was pretty decent there at Oklahoma, but never really earned that starting role, had some injury issues. This is a guy that led Texas, a playoff team in, 24? I think they made the playoffs. Yeah. A playoff team in 24, led the team, was their leading rusher, 1,000-yard rusher. And so I think the caveat with him is, are you going to get the healthy version? Can he stay healthy? And if he can, I think it's a plus addition. He can be a plus player for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you make very good points there. I tend to see it a little bit differently in the sense that, yes, you needed to replace Salchuk because you did not – I don't think they anticipated Salchuk going into the portal. I think he came back to negotiate. This is just an assumption. He came back to negotiate – and he wanted more, and they were like, yeah, no. And he's like, all right, I'm gone. So you needed to find a replacement. So I agree that you needed to refine a replacement. On the priority list of what you needed in the portal, running back would have been at the complete bottom in my mind, like the bottom. It would have been the last thing I would have found, right? And I would have found some D2, low D1 level running back in the portal and brought him in just to have another body that could do that, because I'm putting all my eggs in the basket of Chroma and Singleton. You saw what those two did this season when they got a fair shake. Chroma is a multi-million, or I won't say multi-million. He's definitely in the million-dollar range. Very expensive acquisition out of high school. And the way they used the running backs last year was an absolute just mind-boggling how they would use that. And you have this very expensive running back that you didn't use very well last year. And so, and then you have Sam Singleton, who has proven every time that boy touches the ball, something electric happens, right? So in my mind, I'm putting the running back thing all the way at the no. You need offensive linemen. You need defensive line. You need linebacker. You needed a quarterback. I mean, my goodness. Those are way more important positions to go get after than to go after this running back. I get you needed a running back, but I imagine this guy did not come cheap. Okay. And when I say cheap, I mean, whatever the range for the running backs are, my imagination, and I don't know this for sure, is that he came somewhere in the higher range because of his production, because of what he did at Texas. And I'm just saying, you could have saved that money and maybe used it towards a better defensive lineman or offensive lineman. So for me, I don't see this as a good take. Like, I think you could have got a better value on a different position with that money that you used to get this kid, where you could have gotten maybe a lower level running back, D1, D2 level, that could have come in and just been another body, because you already got two studs in the locker room. And, oh, don't let me forget that you have Amari Thomas coming in from the high school ranks.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree that it should have been way down the priority list. And yeah, you could have put that money into a more crucial position, right? Yeah. I don't disagree at all with that. And when I say good take, I mean more like he's a good player.
Yeah. Yes. I agree with that. Whether
you needed him or not, I don't know. Now, I will say, at least in fairness, when he committed, this was prior to the Twins leaving. This was prior to Amari Williams leaving. This was prior to Juice Cryer and a lot of these guys leaving. So maybe you didn't think maybe you had some extra money you thought you could spend. Also, just from the perspective that Gus Malzahn's offense is so heavily based on the run game, that's why I think running back is a priority in this offense. I just don't know that he needed to be a priority this offseason, right? Because Kroma averaged more yards per carry. Mm-hmm. And so I think he's going to be a great back. And the thing is, you don't want to scare Kroma off either, we've heard he's on a 2-year deal. He's probably going to be gone after next year anyway.
Right.
But if you made him your stud starting back, maybe he stays, right? I don't hate the take. I just, like you said, man, I would have probably, for what he cost, I would have rather had an offensive lineman or maybe a good defensive lineman, but it could end up paying off in the long run. I mean, obviously, if they think the kid is that guy and he can come in and be a 1,000-1,200 yard rusher for you or something like that, then we'll see. But like you said, it's just, you wonder how this is going to shape out because of how poorly the running back rotation was handled last year. You know, are you just going to ride this guy and put Singleton on the back burner again? You know what I mean? Or Kroma? I just think these two at least could be, Kroma and Wisner could be a good 1-2 punch with Singleton coming in as a nice little curveball off the bench. Yeah. But no, you're right. It should not have been a priority. The money should have been spent somewhere else. But in such a run-heavy offense, knowing you bargain bin the quarterback again, I'm not saying the guy's Dalvin Cook, but what I'm saying is, like, if you have Dalvin Cook, I can live with a budget quarterback. I can live with, you know, whatever else you're having to rob Peter to pay Paul and stuff like that.
You're so right. We did that with Everett Golston, budget quarterback.
Right. Yeah. Right. But it didn't matter because Dalvin Cook was just so daggone good. And right. I'm not saying this kid's Dalvin Cook, but, you know, 1,000-yard rusher is something that we need. But who's going to block for him? That's the biggest question. Who's going to block for this guy? Well, we might have one answer on that, Michael. And Florida State, just before we started recording, did get their first offensive line commit, which is what everybody's really been waiting on, is to get an offensive line commit, because we know essentially you're starting over. You need five new starters. Now, some of those starters might come from the players that you already have. We expect most of them will not. But Florida State gets a commitment from Braden Joyner, 6'2", 310-pound redshirt junior, who started his career at Auburn. He redshirted there his first year. Then he played in 23. Then he played in 10 games in 2024, started the final five games. So he kind of won the job there. Then he transfers to Purdue, started all 12 games in 2025. He has 1,277 snaps of experience. So he's got experience at the Power Four level, which I do like. He was a freshman All-SEC selection in 2024. That's nice. PFF grades at Auburn in 24 was 62.4, above average of 60, but barely, and slightly increased to 62.7 in 2025. And so you get him as well. And then, you know, you get a slight uptick there. Now, the confusing part for me, right, is he going to be a center or a guard? Because the one person that we kind of felt like could have been a starter for Florida State on the offensive line was Samman Thompson,
right?
And he's a center. But, you know, the other thing with that is you could also kick this guy out to guard, right? You could use him as a guard if you wanted to. And so I think it really comes down to who do you feel better about being your starter? Is it like an Andre Otto at guard? So maybe you put this guy at center. Is it if you feel really, really good about Sandman Thompson being your center, then you can bump this guy out to guard. Right. Right. And so you have options with him, at least in the interior perspective. So that I do like. And, you know, just a quick note, we were talking about this before the show, is when you talk about the center position, I understand a lot of us like Sandman Thompson. I do too. Eventually you got to start playing your high school recruits. Right. You just got to. But, you know, when you talk about the center position on the offensive line, obviously blocking is very important, right? And obviously snapping the ball is very important. I feel more comfortable with a younger, inexperienced guard than I do a younger, inexperienced center. Because this is the guy, you know, we talk about Luke Pettibon last year, the quarterback of the offensive line. This is the guy that's got to come up, line everybody up, make the calls, be in sync with the quarterback. And so, to me, I value experience at the center position. Now, the unfortunate part about this is he did allow 26 pressures last year as the center. And that's a very high number of pressures for a center, a guy who gets basically help on either side on almost every play, unless you're lining up against 3-3-5 with a true nose tag. So it's not a Luke Pettibon level take for me, right? For sure. It's not that high level, but it's an experienced guy that's got some size. And I think he's probably going to give you either your starter at either guard or center, or he's at least going to be in real competition with Sandman for there. So he creates some competitive depth. So we need offensive line. So I ain't mad at the take. I just have that like, okay, we got experience. We got size. We did the all SEC thing in 2024. We also had to transfer Purdue, and we didn't also do great at Purdue. So it's kind of like we talked about with the quarterback. Like there's good, there's also bad.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. But you know what? We needed offensive linemen, and we got one in the fold.
Listen, we need offensive linemen. I like the kid. I do think, you know, the pressures, you know, giving up those pressures, especially at center, is kind of a tricky thing there. You know, you want to be careful about that. You know, your center, you know, the worst thing you'd have for a quarterback is having pressure right up the middle. That is like the worst thing. You played offensive lineman and you know that as well too. Like that's like the worst thing you want. So you hope that he has in some ways grown from that, and that Herb Hand could, you know, fix whatever the little technique things that need to be fixed there. But like you said, man, we needed offensive linemen. We needed the ability to because we're going to have to replace this whole line. And depending on what you do with Sandman Thompson, I don't know if you said this before, but in the pre-show, you talked about how, you know, that center is making a lot of the checks, a lot of the calling the defense, so, you know, aligning the line to who the mic is and where the blitz is coming from and all those different things. And it's risky to have a freshman in that role right off the bat. It's so risky. And the risk versus reward usually doesn't pay off. So to have a guy who's played center, who's had an experience there, come in, and maybe you have to work and fix some of that technique. And also you're going to have to give them some help anyways, from the guards, you know, that might be a better thing as well too. I like Sandman Thompson. So it'd be interesting to see how Herb Hand handles this.
Yeah. And speaking of breaking news, lineman, hot off the press recording. That's why I'm looking off screen. We're trying to take turns so we can get this in for you. So breaking news, Florida State lands another offensive lineman, Nate Pabst. Nate Pabst out of Bowling Green. Now this name doesn't excite you a whole lot, right? When you talk about coming out of Bowling Green, but the guy's got a ton of experience, man. Yep. He has played over 2,000 snaps, according to PFF here. Sounds like he has been with Bowling Green since 2021. So I don't know why. He doesn't have any stats recorded in 2021 and 2022 per PFF, but he's a graduate transfer, so you're going to get another one-year guy. Yep. He is 6'5", 315 pounds, so he's a pretty good size tackle. You know, from the length, he also did play some guard as well. Yep. So if they needed to kick him inside, he could probably be a guard there as well. But he appeared in 42 games, started 38. He played, again, a lot of snaps, man. He allowed just one sack in 354 passing plays. He has kind of gotten a little bit better every year.
Every
like his,
year.
His PFF grade in 23 was not good. I'll be honest, 47.9.
It was terrible.
It was not good in 2024, 58.9. But then it was good last year.
Really good.
69.2, right? And again, you're talking about he only allowed one sack. Well, PFF credits him a little bit differently. One sack on the year in 2025. So that's good. He really did improve a lot, right?
Yes,
he had a rough game the first one against Lafayette, but everything else went pretty good. Only allowed 14 pressures last year, so not bad at all. He was also a team captain for them. He was a second-team All-MAC selection. So that's the thing, man. Like, I think it's another good addition for Florida State when you're talking about a veteran guy. Reminds me a lot of like Jacob Rizzi, right? A guy who is a veteran, just played a ton of football. It just hasn't been at the Power Four level. And so I think when you look at this, you need bodies, man. You got to throw bodies at this problem. And so this is a body that at least if you're going to take from the G5 level, you're going to get a guy who was a second team All-MAC. You're going to get a guy who's a team captain, probably a good locker room guy, a guy that's got some size, a guy that's got a ton of experience.
Yeah.
And so will he be your starter? I don't know, right? But will he at least be able to give you some competitive depth in there? I think so. And so to me, again, when you're talking about a problem with offensive line that you know the solution is, you just throw bodies at it. You throw 10 bodies and you hope 5 of them work out.
Absolutely.
I'm good with it.
Yeah, I'm good with it too. I actually kind of like this pickup. Like you said, he played a lot of snaps at right tackle, 493 snaps at right tackle, and then he played 273 snaps at right guard. And just looking at the quick film, okay, guys, this is like super quick because this is right
on
off
the fly,
the press.
Live right now.
Live. I just pulled it up just to get some quick film. You know, he's not flashy. He's a hoss though. This dude is big. You know, but he's consistent. You know, what I'm seeing so far, you know, he gets on his block. He's able to get off his block. He has a really good, he's able to carve off space. He can move, you know, laterally pretty well at the tackle spot here. So I feel like this is a decent pickup. And here's the other thing I'll say. Remember last offseason when they were getting all these offensive players and we were like, oh, these are nobodies, like the offensive line, and they didn't do, you know, they weren't flashy names. And guess what? It turned out to be a average to above average line, you know, right? You know, a lot of the sacks were really on Tommy, not on them. They weren't getting blown up. It was one of the top five rushing offenses in the country. Now, I mean, if you account for, you know, taking out the cupcake games, they were still running the ball, you know, over 140 something yards against Power Four competition. So I think, again, I trust Herb Hand that if he likes this guy, I have more trust in him than I do, you know, a lot of the other coaching staff. If he likes this guy, then I imagine that this guy could be a productive player for Florida State.
It's so funny, the last thing you said, because you literally took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say, like, look, until proven otherwise, there are a couple of truths in this world. I do not trust Mike Norvell with quarterbacks.
Nope.
But I do trust Herb Hand with offensive linemen because he has not given me a reason not to yet.
Correct.
And so if he says this guy's good enough, then he's good enough. And again, that may just be for competitive depth.
Right.
But
right.
You need bodies right now.
That's right.
So let's just get him in the door. And looking over his games last year, man, I mean, he had a couple of up and downs, but overall, I mean, he was pretty consistent. They did play Louisville last year. And in that game, he gave up four pressures. Three hurries, so not too great there. But other than that, man, he had some pretty decent games. I don't know that he's like a starter for you. Maybe you kick him into guard, but, you know, again, you got to throw bodies and it's a body. So continuing down the commit list, one here that's kind of old news we'll just share on real quick was cornerback Nehemiah Chandler out of South Alabama. Now, did we need a DB? I don't know, man. I that was another position I don't think should have been really prioritized, but I don't think this is a bad take at all by this kid looking at him. I know people are going to hear South Alabama and say it's not great, but 6'2", 185, so he's got length, played high school football right down the road from Tallahassee in Wakulla in Crawfordville. He spent a year at Georgia Tech where he redshirted, so he was at least a Power 5 commit out of high school. Then he transferred to South Alabama, where as a redshirt freshman started 10 games, played in 11, recorded 32 tackles, 13 PBUs, led the Sun Belt in pass breakups and two interceptions. He finished with a solid 77 PFF grade, which is really good. The concern I have with him is his run defensive grade was 47.5, and his tackling grade was 41.2. So those are both bad. But his 82 coverage grade was the third highest in all of the Sun Belt. And again, like I said, he led them in PBUs. He did allow six touchdowns on 49 targets that last season. So that's not good, but he was obviously targeted, you know, quite a bit there. But man, you know, with having Jabril Rawls back, I think you pretty much already locked in one of your starters there at corner. And he has some experience and some positives to work with. He also has 3 years of eligibility remaining and some things to clean up. So I think what you're looking at with this guy, man, is you get someone who can compete for the starting job, or you got someone who can develop a year or two, maybe a year, and work on some of the things that he's got to get better at. And then he can be a guy for you going forward. But he's got experience. You know, right now, a lot of the guys that you have don't have experience outside of Jabril Rawls. He did. I did also look it up. He played zone coverage 64.7% of snaps per PFF and had a 75.5 PFF grade, which was the sixth best in the Sun Belt. So he kind of seems like a zone coverage leaning specialist, which is what you need in Tony White's defense. So all in all, man, again, did we need a DB like the running backs? No, but you know what? The guy's got 3 years of eligibility and he's got some experience. I'll take it.
I think honestly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I think this might be a one for one with Edwin Joseph to this kid. Mm-hmm. I think this is the other kind of nickel corner starter here they're looking for. This guy, like you just said right there, the 60% in zone coverage with a
75.5 PFF. So, and I will say he did serve a lot, I think, as one like a nickel position sometimes there too. So yeah, that's you're right on that. Because he had some tackles for loss too.
So this is probably just that one for one switch. This is the guy they'll probably pencil in right now, at least at that nickel kind of rover spot there. What that Edwin Joseph had kind of taken over before he transferred out as well. So they on the pecking order, did they need this desperately? No. But this was one of those picked up, like you said, with the running back kind of thing. It was there for the taking. You probably got him at a decent price. You might as well go ahead and get him.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is now we're just waiting on a lot more defensive news.
Right.
That's just what we need. Like the linemen or the linebackers, the things that, you know, we kind of don't have any of right now.
Yep. Yeah.
And so the last note on here on the portal, because again, guys, this is going to be one of those revolving things where like we're going to try and hit every commit we can while we're in front of the camera, in front of the microphone. But these things are going to be constantly rolling in. So we're going to have to catch up as we can. But one of the big visitors that I do want to mention, at least here, that is supposed to be on campus is Auburn's starting offensive tackle. Now, I know I told you guys earlier that Auburn's offensive line was not good. So take with this what you may. But he is set to visit. Maybe getting Ashton Daniels could help, help him bring that over. But he is 6'7", 348 pounds. So he's a massive dude. Reminds me a lot of Micah Pettis with that size.
Yep.
Played 2 years at Virginia Tech, started 25 games there, has over 2,200 snaps of experience. He was pretty darn good at Virginia Tech, though. He also was just kind of okay at Auburn last year. So, again, you need bodies. It's a body to throw at it. And, yeah, man. I mean, we'll see if they land him, but I think he's going to visit there and like Baylor, I think it was, or Kentucky or something like that. So we'll see. Again, we just really want to start hearing names in the trenches because that's really important. And Michael, the last thing I want to talk about here, so we don't run you guys too long, is the losses from the portal. Just kind of the news that's come out the past week and everything that's just gone along with that. But before we jump into that, let me just quick say, if you guys are enjoying the content that we're bringing you right now, breaking news live on, well, not live, we're recording. So I guess live on recording.
Yeah.
Breaking news, doing all that stuff, man. We would greatly appreciate a like and subscribe to the YouTube channel, a rate and a review on the podcast. Really, it just helps the channel. It just helps us reach other Noel fans. It does not cost you a single thing. It does not sign you up for a single thing. It just helps us grow. So we would greatly appreciate that, because without you guys, we don't exist. And so the more Noel fans we can bring to the channel, the better we can do. So we would greatly appreciate that for you guys if you're enjoying this content. Now, Michael, let's transition into this last part. Some of the losses and stuff that have come out, and just some of the, it's been a tough couple of days, man, seeing some of these names. Like, I came on the last episode and I said, why is everyone crying over spoiled milk? Not even spilled milk, spoiled milk. Like, people are crying on social media about 26 players who produced 7-17 leaving. Man, let's send 26 more to the portal. How about that? But I had said I was okay with it as long as you had the Twins, as long as you had Chroma, as long as you had Deuce Robinson, as long as right. you had all these guys. Well, then the news comes out, the Twins entered the portal. Amari Williams enters the portal. Now Justin Kreyer entered the portal. So, like, you're losing our freaking next punter kicker.
Just Bruno entered Reyes the portal.
Entered the portal. So, like, you're seeing a lot of people leave. Obviously, the Twins is the one that was a gut punch, right? That was a really, really big gut punch because it was the best thing you had last year, really, outside of Deuce. It was the best defensive players you had. It was the one bright spot that you had over there. They were up-and-coming freshmen. You know, you Mandro maybe a little bit better than Daryl, but you were like, as long as we can keep both, we can build our defensive line around those guys next year. You can build them around Kevin Wynn and the Desir twins. That can be the core of what you're building going forward, and you can get these guys for a couple of years. You found diamonds in the rough.
Right.
But you know what, Michael? Sometimes those diamonds get polished.
Yes, they do.
Those diamonds get very expensive. And, you know, you've been reading on this, so I'll let you elaborate a little bit more on it. But I think a big gripe from the fan base is, man, you should have locked these kids up in November.
Yeah.
And it sounds like from what you were telling me, they tried to. And it's just, again, that diamond kept getting polished and the market rose. And so they decided to test the waters again. And so there's only so much to go around. And again, I'm not saying that you shouldn't pay up for these kids because you absolutely should pay up for these kids.
Absolutely.
And you got them for a steal coming out of high school because they were some 3 stars that I think were going to go to a G5 school, and you ended up taking them, and they hit.
They hit.
And, you know, the Mandrill was a freshman All-American per On3. So you should pay up for these kids. They should be probably the most expensive defensive lineman that you have on the roster. The money only goes so far, man.
That's right.
You know, it's like, what is it? Kevin Hart used to say, like, the way my bank account's set up, there's just only so much you can do.
Right.
And so if the number just gets too far, you know, in the air, can you replace them for the money that they're asking? Right. Because, and I mean this as respectfully as possible, right? Daryl's really a good player. Mandrill is the one. He is the one. And so you're kind of getting the brother tax in a little way, right? Like, you're going to pay Daryl because you want to keep Mandrill, and Daryl is also good, but he's not Mandrill right now. Now he could turn out to be better than him next year.
Right.
So it's kind of like, yeah, you are getting two players, but what if you could go get like a Jared Verse for the numbers that they're asking for as a pair? And so I don't want to see him walk. I want to see him come back, but you just can't keep getting, you know, bent over for money on NIL every single year, like we saw them do in the past with the other guys. And, you know, Juice Kreyer, whatever, that's not – I mean, he's a great locker room guy. I don't care about any linebackers coming back. Amari Williams, super disappointed because he was one of your best recruits. Yep. He was an up-and-comer. You can probably replace him for, whatever. It's not a big deal there. But, man, I'll throw it back to you on this. Let me just say this one thing real quick. I think this is becoming – this is a product – of where Florida State is at in these negotiations, right? Of what you've seen. Like, you have a bad product on the field and you've had poor recruiting, which means you don't have leverage in these negotiations.
That's right.
And that's the hard part. Like, a lot of these players know you need them more than they need, them more than they need you, right? And they also know, because you haven't recruited well enough, you don't have anyone good enough on the roster to replace them. So you're going to have to go out and spend up to replace them anyway. So why wouldn't they squeeze us for money?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a nasty world out there, especially when you start getting these agents involved. And, you know, that's what we heard with the Calandria thing. Like, the guy, you know, his agent looked straight out of like Miami Vice or something like that, you know, just chest hair all out and stuff, walks in there and they do the negotiating while the player and the family wait outside. So once you start, the problem is once you start getting these agents involved and families involved and you're seeing on social media, this quarterback gets $5 million and this guy gets $1 million. It's kind of a sad thing. And I'm not saying this happens in every situation, but man, some of these families see that as a payday. These agents see that as a payday, and they're going to pump these kids up who are 17, 18 years old, and they want to get paid too, but they may get bad advice, which we've seen 100 times in the portal, by someone else trying to squeeze them for money. And, you know, I think where it's just most of these players nowadays have become mercenaries. And so while you want to try and build through high school, you want to develop guys for years on end, and you want to bring them up and have culture guys, and you want all of these things. But in the modern game, man, I think you probably should just start treating them like the mercenaries that they are, right? Yeah. We have a number that we'll pay for you. If you're good enough, you get it. If you're not, bye. We'll go find somebody else. Because, right. You know, back to your point, John Garrett, every single player in the country is a free agent. Right. It's just whether or not they're going to get the call to make them jump in the portal or not. And so, and the last thing I'll say, man, on just this whole situation, right, is that this is not just Florida State, right? You said there are 8,000 kids in the portal. Yep. This is every school is losing, is bleeding players, hemorrhaging players right now. And I think we have to remember as fans, and this is very important because I saw a lot of people really took up in arms with Lagway potentially committing. These kids aren't fans of the schools like we are. They nope. don't care about the brand like we do. These kids are trying to go where the best opportunity financially and all the, you know, on the field and winning and all these things. That's where these are trying. That's what they want. Yep. Right. And so they're not worried about, oh, I play for Florida State or, you know, Florida the next year. Like right. I promise you, I can piss a lot of fans off by showing you a picture of Dalvin Cook in Florida gear, or it was either Florida or Miami. He was committed to before we flipped them. And so, man, it's just, it's everywhere. It's not just Florida State. The problem that Florida State has right now is the house ain't got a lot of money right now because you've been bleeding funds by having a bad product and poor recruiting. So of course the kids are going to squeeze you for money because they know you don't have another plan. And so right. it's just the unfortunate part of it, man. This isn't the college football we grew up with and love dearly that plays for the pride of the name and the program, but it's the situation that we find ourselves in. And so until Florida State starts recruiting very well, and until Florida State starts, you know, really having success on the field, this is just going to be the cycle every year.
Yeah, 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 for sure. And let me go back to the Desir twin stuff, you know, and I'll give you really quickly, you know, and when I say the word facts, I don't mean like I've confirmed them, but basically what we're hearing, reading, versus also just the conundrum that you're in, okay? So, you know, like Jesse said, the twins signed out of high school. They were three-star prospect. So they signed basically a three-star prospect deal, NIL deal, rev share deal with Florida right. State. Then Mandrell got really good, right?
Yeah.
And he became a bright spot. And so then later in the season, towards the end of the season, they renegotiated. Florida State went to them and renegotiated that deal, okay? And then they said both players said yes and signed. Okay, the season ends, it's quiet, everything's fine, and then boom, they're like, no, we want more money, according to sources from 247 Zach Bolstein, that they wanted more money. And so Florida State began to renegotiate with them, okay, and they wanted a certain number. And Florida State has been trying to get closer to that number, but there apparently is still a sizable gap that remains and what they want. Now, the twins have submitted their paperwork to be in the transfer portal, but Florida State has, I think, 2 business days before they have to actually get it submitted in that sense as well, too. Also, what we have to know is that there is a significant buyout in the deal that the twins signed. And that's also what is kind of keeping Florida State in the picture right now, is that buyout would be significant. And either the school or the agency would have to pay the next school would have to pay that. And so we'll see how that pans out. The conundrum around this is what happens when, like you talked about, you know, when the money isn't there, you've sucked, and these players are they have agents in their head saying, hey, you could go here and get this. You go here and get this. Like, let's get in the portal. Let's get in the portal. Let's get in the portal. You're like, you just signed a deal. Like, that's that one part. And the other part that just really frustrates me about this, and again, I'm all for players having the ability to make as much money as they possibly can. You'll mm-hmm. never hear me say they shouldn't. I mean, the NCAA has been benefiting off the backs of these players for eons, and it's been illegal. And it's about time somebody did that. But the difference is with pro and here is that there are rules and regulations to that. This is the Wild West. These players have way too much power.
Yep.
Too much power. too much power, right?
Yeah.
And in a capitalistic society, there has to be checks and balances to every power. And when you're allowing these kids to just say yes, sign on a dotted line, and then make it basically almost unenforceable, they could just dip out. Like, that's not good for the game. And at some point, this is going to get to a space where this is going to be untenable and unwatchable, because you don't know who's coming in, who's not going to be there. At some point, you know what's going to happen is you're going to see what you see in the NFL a little bit, of these players just saying, okay, you don't want to pay me? I'm sitting out. I'm out. Mm-hmm. Right? What are you going to do then, when half your players are sitting out because they're on strike for pay? Right? And there's no checks and balances to that. That's what I don't like about what the Desir twins are doing. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that they signed a deal with FSU. You sign that deal, a renegotiated deal, you know, and then you're going to renege on that after, because you want more money. Like, you're freshmen. Yeah. You should not be making crazy amount of money on a football team. No freshman is making probably the money you would potentially be commanding. So I think that's it as well too.
Yeah, and when you see some of like Texas A&M, LSU, or some of the names that are rumored, it's just big money. So they're just gonna go draw you know, big money. And yeah, it takes the love of the game out of it a little bit, which is the hard part, man, for us as fans to see this happening. And you know, the difference between pro and that is there's just no one looking out for the game of college football. And until there are rules in place, and the courts won't do anything to help, they always side with the players every single time. No one wants to tell the kids no. And until the government, like Congress, gets involved and actually makes some rules, because you have no college football commissioner, you have no committee that overlooks the good of the game. Like, imagine if the AFC South and the NFC South had two different salary caps. It would be wild. Mm. And that's just kind of what we got right now. And you can't blame the programs, the players, or the coaches, or anybody for doing everything they can to either spend as much as they can or get as much as they can.
Right.
Because if no one's going to police it, why would you not?
Why would you not? It's the Wild West again.
Right. And so, yeah, it's a frustrating situation, but it's a situation you probably need to get used to every single year. I mean, you know, you see Caleb Downs leaves Alabama to go to Ohio State. Like, that's a really big player off a really good team.
Huge. Yeah.
It's going to happen until something happens.
Correct.
That's pretty much it. But the last thing we got before we get out of here, Michael, was a little bit of news that you texted me. Again,
breaking time soon.
Earl Little has withdrawn from the 2026 draft, but he's not coming back to Florida State. He is going to enter the portal. And hopefully, Michael, hopefully his arms entered a portal with him, because we know the man didn't have arms when he played for Florida State. So
he didn't know not how to wrap up.
It was like dude was playing with no arms. It was one of those where we had heard he might take his name out of the draft, but not to enter the portal, just to come back. And it was kind of like, I don't know how I feel about that, because he helped you win the Bama game. He also cost you a couple of games from tackling.
And yes, he did.
I'm not sad to see that change there, but that's just a little bit of news that we'll catch you guys up on as we head out the door. So, Michael, I thought we were going to finally hit under an hour here, but we had news falling in our lap left and right, so we're going to catch up on it as best we can. And so that's going to do it for the show. Again, guys, stay tuned, stay subscribed, hit that notification bell so you don't ever miss an episode. I'm going to try to get better about sitting down, doing little tidbits of news as they pop. So we're not trying to play catch up so often. And so we're going to kind of take that approach as the portal goes, because things happen so fast in the portal. But we appreciate you guys watching. Enjoyed this one, Michael. Again, I know there's not a lot of reason to be like cheery and excited, but that doesn't mean we're going to come on here and dump on Florida State every single time we record. So, you know, we'll just see how the rest of the portal season plays out, man. I really would like to start seeing some defensive line commits. I would really like to see some more offensive line commits. I'd like to see a linebacker, because I don't know that we have but more than about two right now anyway. So we got a lot to watch for. But again, we always love recording and talking with you guys with Noel Nation. So we appreciate you guys more than you know. So like and subscribe on the channel, rate and review on the podcast. You can join the PTS tribe if you would like. It is not required by any means. We let you choose whether you want to pay for the content here or not, or help support us financially. It's only $5 a month. Just hit the join button there on YouTube or subscribe or whatever it says there. After you subscribe, you'll see that extra option. It just helps us grow in this channel. Everything goes back into it, as well as the tailgates and stuff that we do throughout the season. Again, make sure you check out Alumni Hall. Get you some awesome FSU gear. Save 10% with Coach Spear. That's online or in-store. So, Michael, until the next one, until the next little bit of news that we got, we will catch you guys on the other side. Thanks for watching. And as always, go Noles.